AM 1290 and 98.3 FM, KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome. It is the Wednesday edition of TalkBack, and it's actually County Talk to start things off this morning. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by Y West Storage, offering secure, flexible self-storage in Missoula. Give them a call. These are all 406 numbers, obviously, 510-0590, to reserve your unit today at Y West. Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call Quality Seamless Gutters, 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Give them a call today, 541-9097 for Bruckner's. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can always trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219 and get yourself a free estimate. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Give them a call today at Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair, parts and service in Missoula. Call Gomer's, 728-7620. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, where they provide medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Give them a call today, 721-8468.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Rain likely to continue through Wednesday afternoon with skies mostly cloudy. Highs will be in the low to mid 50s. We could see some strong west to southwest winds gusting up to about 20 miles per hour in the valleys, a little higher on the ridgetops, maybe 40 to 50 miles per hour at elevation and also in southwest Montana. A chance of rain Wednesday night, mainly before midnight. It could even be mixed with a little snow at times. And then looking at Thursday, turning brighter, mostly sunny with a high in the mid 40s.
Hey, welcome everybody. Good to have you along on this Wednesday edition of TalkBack. It is County Talk, and we are privileged to have with us our Missoula County Commissioners, Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Slotnick. Hello to all of you, lady and gentlemen.
Good morning. Hey,
good morning. Good morning, Peter. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
And you brought a special guest with you. It's Jason Mitchell. He's the director of the Department of Public Works here in Missoula. How are you, Dave? Good to see you, Jason.
Good to see you, and thank you for having us.
You bet. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's take it away. County Commissioners, what's going on with Jason?
What is going on with Jason?
So I'm going to just toss this out. When people hear the word public works, they may not be certain what we're talking about. Public works for us are roads and bridges, and also our sewer and water districts and our building division. So with that, I'll hand it to you, Jason.
Yeah. So we manage a lot here in Missoula County.
Right on top of that mic.
We manage all the roads that aren't state. So that's about 460 miles of roads. 180 miles of those are gravel. And then we also manage, like Josh said, water and sewer districts around the county, building codes. So we try to keep our constituents safe and all of the building that's going on throughout the county. So public works is usually pretty busy.
And bridges that aren't even county bridges.
Yeah. And you guys used to do snow plowing back when we had winter.
Yeah, when we had winter.
What did your guys do this winter?
Yeah, so they were doing a lot of potholing, right-of-way clearing, which consists of brush cutting and, you know, keeping our roads generally safe. We actually wound up doing some grading midwinter, which we typically save for spring and fall, but throughout the winter, we had guys out there grading.
Awesome. Does that mean you feel like you're going into the summer a little bit ahead?
Well, yeah, we did have this late snowfall here, so some of the roads up in Sealy and Condon have actually been quite wet, and especially like Lindbergh Lake Road is getting washed out, so we're doing some work up there today. So a lot of these roads are just super saturated right now and require us to just do a lot more maintenance.
Okay. Jason, since this is your first time joining us on KGVO here, yes, and probably the first time some of the listeners have heard you since you're relatively new to Missoula County, is there anything you'd like to say about your background and who you are?
Introduce yourself, young man. Yeah. Yeah, please.
Thank you. So, yeah, I come from a private background in private industry. Spent the last 15 years as a facilities director for a French-based company, Engie, and then before that, Comcast Cable Corporation, and decided to make a change into the public sector. where I feel like I can make a greater impact to our constituents. And it's not so much about the bottom line, but are serving our community. So I've really enjoyed coming to Missoula and working for the constituents. And on a daily basis, I feel like I get to make a change here in the local community.
That's awesome.
I just want everybody to know, of course, that this is a talk show. So all of our phone lines are open. If you have a question for our county commissioners or Jason Mitchell, who's joining us here in the studio this morning, the director of the Department of Public Works, the phone lines are open at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Okay, so what are we working on now? I'm looking at this amazing list of things that you have on your plate, and I'm wondering if you ever have a chance to sit down and enjoy a cup of coffee every now and then.
I try to, especially with the commissioners on Monday morning when we have our public meeting. Yeah. You know, that's kind of our coffee talk between us here at the Missoula County.
Yeah. So what are some of the highlight projects from this summer that you think are really going to be beneficial and people be excited about?
Yeah, so again, we're going to be doing a lot of routine maintenance. Our goal, we put before the commissioners a capital improvement plan that consists of doing repaving of some of our major roads, such as Big Flat and Blue Mountain. It'll really be up to our CFO and our tax base to understand if we can fully do those projects, but obviously there's always a lot in the hopper in terms of bridge work that needs to be done. Sunset Hill Road Bridge, we're going to be doing a redecking project on, and consistently really trying to keep our bridges up to standards, whether it's through reinforcing culverts. Public Works manages oversees about 515 bridges and culverts throughout the county. 130 of those are bridges.
That's a lot of work.
Right, it is, yeah. And so MDT, Montana Department of Transportation, inspects those, and we're supposed to keep those sort of a certain standard, so we're continually working on the bridges to keep them up to snuff.
And what about bridges in the city?
Yeah, so we manage bridges in the city that are not state routes. So, for instance, Scott Street Bridge, we do a lot of work on that.
That's had some major overhauls in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's correct. And then also, there's going to be a fencing project up there to keep the constituents down below the bridge safe. There's continually work on bridges throughout the city.
So what do you enjoy most about your job? I mean, obviously, you got a lot to do, a lot on your plate. So when you get to work in the morning, you say, I can't wait to do...
Work with the commissioners.
Yes, that's it. That is one of the top things is we have a...
Could I have opened the door a little wider on that one?
We have a group of commissioners here that are highly dedicated. They're very curious and always asking questions about how we can better things for the community, and that's what really inspires me. We're not just sitting there doing routine maintenance projects every day. We have commissioners that take calls from constituents and really push to get answers to questions, and they really work to find how to get to yes. I know a lot of local governments could potentially say no, we don't have the budget for that, but our commissioners and our Public Works Department is always trying to get to yes and really try to get answers for people. So that's what really inspires me.
What are the creative... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, has anything surprised you about Public Works or public service?
That's a great question, Juan. So I think one of the main things that has surprised me is the lack of budget. You know, coming from the private, coming from companies that had $100 billion.
Are you saying the taxpayers are a little bit stingy? Is that the...
Not at all. No, not at all. It's just amazing how much that we can do as a public works department with a small budget. I'm coming from private industry where you throw $50, $60 million at a problem, and our budget is not nearly that big. So that was what really surprised me, is how much we can do with a small budget.
Well, I just want folks to know the phone lines are open at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. This is County Talk. All three of our county commissioners are here in the studio with us, Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Slotnick, with their special guest, Jason Mitchell, who's the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. So let us continue with that conversation. So when it comes to planning out future projects, how does that work? Yeah, you have to work with the commissioners, obviously, but are there other state and private perhaps federal folks you have to work with?
Yeah, great question. So there's a couple things there. We just went through our grant planning cycle. So basically we submitted applications for BUILD, which is a federal program to help with infrastructure around the county. So we just submitted an application for $13 million for Boy Scout Bridge and then wow. $3.1 million for Glacier Creek Bridge. And then recently, the appropriations have come to be. So
those are earmarks.
Earmarks, yeah.
Folks might not know where those bridges are. Where are those bridges?
Yeah, so Sealy Lake is where Boy Scout Bridge is, and then in Condon is where Glacier Creek Bridge is.
And can you explain the earmark process? Because we don't get to ask directly. Explain the process.
Yeah, so basically, the process as of late is... each of the congressmen or people and senators have an appropriation process by which you submit projects to them directly through their staff. And so there'll be each congressperson has their own application process. For instance, Sheehy, he has just a pretty informal form you submit, but you... put all the details of the project on there and then find out hopefully by June if you have funding for that project.
And if I might give it just a concrete example for folks, one, and I think there might be a couple we could point to in Sealy Lake. Recently, Representative Zinke was successful in getting $10 million for the wastewater, the proposed wastewater treatment facility. And I think some dollars flowed to Lolo also. Is that correct?
That's correct. We got about $1.7 million for our Lolo water treatment facility.
I am so glad you said that. My son lives at Lolo. And I will tell you, I get an earful every now and then. Could you talk to these guys about helping us out with a sewer system and a water system and all those things? I mean, it's not being done, but they would certainly like to see perhaps it elevated a little bit.
Yeah, luckily we were able to put about $10 million worth of ARPA funds. Josh, could you tell us what ARPA stands for?
Yeah, the American Rescue Plan Act. This came from back during the COVID time when the federal government gave out money to local governments, and this was really an unusual move in that the money went directly from the feds to the locals, not via the state, where typically there is just a chokehold, a hairball of regulations that catch money, and we don't actually get to do work. This was a fantastic piece of deregulation in that the money went right to local governments for us to do infrastructure projects, and we were able to address some of these sewer and water deficiencies in Lolo.
And to speak directly to Lolo, we've had some good news as of late. During COVID, we put a moratorium on connections to the system.
Wow.
We looked at the last 3 years of data of the influent, and we've actually discovered that we have about another 400 connections just on the sewer side that we're going to start allocating. On the water side, we actually have a project that we need to conduct to upsize wells 1 and 2 and then upsize a transmission main to make sure that the constituent have adequate fire flow. And so we're going to be performing that project in summer of 2027.
And Jason, do you feel like this kind of added water would facilitate further residential, commercial, retail growth in Lolo?
100%. We've had companies and developers asking us daily when they can start connecting to our system.
And with that, we're up against a break. 721-1290 is our number. The phone lines are open. Our county commissioners are standing right here and would have been sitting right here. Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Slotnick, along with Jason Mitchell, who's the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. And we'd love to have some calls from our listeners because these folks work for you. So if you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Coming right back after this.
With Missoula.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. And life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back. It's County Talk, ladies and gentlemen. All three of our county commissioners are sitting or standing right here in our studio. Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Slotnick are here with their special guest, Jason Mitchell, who's the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. And the phone lines are open if you have a question or comment for these public servants. That's who they are. So we'd love to hear from you and get your concerns. So, but let us, in lieu of calls, let's continue, Jason, with the work that you're doing right now. Let's grab that microphone and talk a little bit about various public works projects that are going on in the county right now.
Yeah, so like stated, we have routine maintenance, so we always have our spring grading. We also have dust abatement program that'll start here in a month or two, where the county provides dust abatement, and then also constituents pay into a program where they can get dust abatement at the cost of just materials.
Right.
And then we also have RSIDs. Josh, you want to talk about RSID a moment?
Sure, yeah. So this is an interesting technique or tool.
Now, let's see if I get it right. Rural Special Improvement District.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So, thank you. I'm here all week.
As Jason mentioned, compared to the private sector, we have a really small budget and there's tons of roads. So we have to make hard choices about which roads to work on. Sometimes there are roads out there in the county that serve just a handful of people or a neighborhood. It's going to be pretty unlikely that we're going to spend our budget on those roads. We're going to spend our budget on the most used roads or the roads that serve the most people. Those roads are going to get attention first. But how about these roads that are far away, only serve a small amount of people, but they really need work, and we can't do it with our budget. The folks who live on those roads can voluntarily, and this is key, this is a voluntary tool, they can get together as a community and decide that they want to voluntarily raise their taxes a certain amount, and that money would go directly to do projects in their neighborhood. That's called an RSID.
I will tell you that's an amazing concept that we can... I mean, anybody out there voluntarily want to raise their taxes?
But your taxes go right to your project instead of like, I'm paying for the library and I never even use it and I'm mad as hell.
Right.
You pay taxes and it fixes directly your road.
You bet.
Or your intersection. You choose where that money goes. And this is voluntary and can only happen if, what's the threshold? I think it's like, is it 60%? Like the neighbors have to vote and it has to be across a certain threshold.
Yeah, not to get too technical, but it's determined by the assessment methodology, but typically it's about 50% of the constituents that the project benefits have to protest to be able to kill that project.
And this has got to come from the community. We don't go put an RSID somewhere. Community members get together and say, we want to do this. And we have a handful of these right now going on in Missoula County.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of getting to was El Toro Lane. We're going to be doing a big repaving project. That's an RSID. And then on Morgan Lane is also an RSID that we'll be paving this summer. And the benefit to the constituent is that we do this a lot cheaper than a general contractor would. We generally do it for the cost of material and then some labor, but really it's a benefit for the whole community because after we bring it up to county standards, we'll then maintain it, such as plowing and salting or throwing gravel.
Good to know. All right, let's get to the phone. Skip is called first. Skip, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners along with Jason Mitchell. Go ahead.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, gentlemen and dear lady. I thought I would ask, because I live down in Ravalli County, it's a little south of Hamilton. And by the way, I'll bring this up first. Ryan Zinke has been instrumental in making sure that we get money for different things down here, too. In fact, he was in town a week and a half ago and to do a little talk when he had Aaron on the road with him, Aaron Flint. And what happened was he was actually racing around so fast because he even had a photo op where he had to deliver a check to the road department down here. So... I wanted to ask, by the way, what we do down here sometimes is they depave some roads. Maybe you could explain what that might be like because it's cheaper in the long run for some roads to be depaved rather than paved. I don't know if you guys do that or not. But now I want to ask, when it comes to our railroad, you know, Mr. Stropmeyer there or... one of you is really the railroad guru.
That's Dave. Yeah, that's Dave Strohmeyer.
Yeah. I wanted to know, down here, we have a spur that comes all the way down through the Bitterroot Valley. I've seen every single year, I see two or three more intersections where the buses still have to stop, even though there's no rail, where there's no rails there. All the school buses have to stop. Is there any chance in the future with the possible southern route of a railroad coming across, is there any chance in the future of having any kind of a railroad spur coming down through the Bitterroot, whether it be for recreational purposes or for through roads? I thought maybe you'd know that, sir.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the call. So, Dave, it's all yours, man.
Yeah, thank you, Skip. I'll take the railroad piece of this, and then I think we can bump back to the pavement question. So, the short answer is yes. With political will and enough financial backing, just about anything can be accomplished. When we're talking about the Bitterroot Branch, which extends from Missoula clear south of Hamilton, there are a lot of challenges with that. So some folks think, well, why don't we work on that first before we start working on this big transcontinental project that myself and others are engaged in? And it's a little bit counterintuitive because the bigger project from Chicago to the Pacific Northwest will be a federal undertaking. If we're talking about reactivating for passenger rail service, for instance, the Bitterroot Branch, which is currently owned by Washington companies, that the costs associated with that would fall locally to the state of Montana, to the local jurisdictions, and it's not going to be inexpensive. The reason why much of that infrastructure is aging. Right. If you think back a decade ago when trains were running, they were going like 5 miles an hour on that. There are a ton of at-grade crossings for driveways and roads. Those would all need to be addressed with safety enhancements. So it's a big deal to think about reactivating that for either freight or passenger rail. What I will say is that at the very least, let's retain the right of way, because once it's gone, it's gone forever.
You're never going to get that back.
That is right.
Exactly. We're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have Craig standing by. It's County Talk. All three of our county commissioners are here in the studio, Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Schlotnick, with their special guest, Jason Mitchell, who is the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. So give us a call. They'll be here with us till 9 o'clock, 721-1290. This is County Talk. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, we have...
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Rain likely to continue through Wednesday afternoon with skies mostly cloudy. Highs will be in the low to mid-50s. We could see some strong west to southwest winds gusting up to about 20 miles per hour in the valleys. A little higher on the ridgetops, maybe 40 to 50 miles per hour at elevation and also in southwest Montana. A chance of rain Wednesday night, mainly before midnight. It could even be mixed with a little snow at times. And then looking at Thursday, turning brighter, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-40s.
Okay, phone lines are lighting up here for County Talk and our special guest to Jason Mitchell, Director of the Department of Public Works. You wanted to address an issue that one of our other callers, our earlier callers, brought up.
Yeah, I think it was a really good point. One of the questions was, is why don't we use some of these appropriation requests to pave roads throughout Missoula County? I just wanted to say we only get a few appropriation requests per year, and because our bridges are in such need of repair and they're such high dollar projects, the only way we're ever going to be able to complete those is through federal dollars. So we really try to save our appropriation requests for those high dollar projects, such as Boy Scout Bridge.
What? Give folks an idea.
Yeah, great question. So Boy Scout Bridge, to complete that's $14.5 million. You're looking at Glacier Creek Bridge, which is got a very low sufficiency rating now. It's about $4.2 million that's going to be needed to complete that project. And just to touch on the other pieces, why don't we bring our roads back to gravel? Why are we still trying to pave? We had a county engineer perform a cost-benefit analysis, and actually, if we can get millings, which are the byproduct of zipping up pavement that MDT, Montana Department of Transportation, can provide us, and we can lay those on the roads and put an overlay over them, it's actually much cheaper in the long run because we're not grading those roads, putting dust abatement on those roads 2 to 3 times a year. And just a final point, it's a very big county. We're 2,600-plus square miles.
Right.
Logistics is a major problem in our county. For us to bring a grader from our admin building by the airport over to Graves Creek Road, I mean, that's a large expense in itself.
Yeah. Okay, we got Craig waiting on the line to visit with you. Folks, Craig, good morning. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead, Nick.
He just hung up. Susan.
He did. Okay. So Susan is standing by. Susan, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners. Go ahead.
Well, I'm actually calling about safety. I would like to have you, comment on people that protest and stand in roadways or stand on bridges and block people from walking across bridges or walking on sidewalks, no matter what they're protesting, when they do not have permits to do so. And I would like to know why they are allowed to do that if they do not have a permit to do so, and why they are not told to go, for instance, to a courthouse or a public area where it's safer for people that are just trying to go about their business.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call. Gentlemen and lady, please go ahead.
Well, I don't have a full answer for you, Susan, but I think it's at least partially a function of the jurisdiction. So with Missoula County, if we're talking about folks protesting, expressing their First Amendment rights on sidewalks in the city of Missoula, that's likely under the jurisdiction of the city of Missoula. And I am not aware of needing a permit to do so anywhere and everywhere. There is some permitting required on the county courthouse grounds, but we can get back to you with the details on that, Susan, if you're interested.
And there's also the bridge, which is just a couple blocks from here, you know, crossing Reserve Street. And oftentimes there are people up there with signs protesting, and I have actually walked up and visited with some of those folks. They're very friendly. I mean, they'll let you through if you have a bicycle or whatever. They're not there to blockade the transportation of the public, but they're just trying to get their point across.
I think that is the key. If public access is being completely impeded or partially impeded, that will be the threshold.
I've had the experience of walking over the over Bear Tracks Bridge when people are protesting, and they let me pass. I just walked by.
Well, I should hope so.
Yeah.
You're a county commissioner.
I don't know that they knew that, but I was just a dude walking over the bridge, and they let me walk by.
I hear you. All right, let's get another call. I believe this is Craig. Craig, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I hope my phone's kind of going in and out, so I hope I can get through okay. I've lived out in the Target Range area for over 30-some years, and this last election cycle, county residents were asked for $2.5 million to improve roads. I'm curious, why is it they have $42 million to put into soccer fields, $2 million to buy the Marshall Mountain ski area, but yet they don't have the funds delegated to fix roads such as Spurgeon from Reserve Street to Clemens?
All right, good question.
Craig, I'll address that a little bit. And I live in that same neighborhood, and man, I would love to see Spurgeon Road fixed up, Jason, if we get that on the list. Those two projects you mentioned, Craig, I'm imagining you're talking about the Fort Missoula Regional Park and Marshall Mountain. And in fact, both of those came to be because voters voted for them in the same way that we put a levy on the ballot to raise money for roads. And people voted for the park, and they voted for open space, and they didn't vote for roads. So it was just democracy. That's just how those things happened.
In 2016, or was it 2016? The open space bond?
There have been a few.
2006 and 2018. Sorry,
yeah,
Craig.
Yeah. And money from the open space bond went to Marshall Mountain. And I don't remember which year it was for Fort Missoula Regional Park, but it was money for parks and trails. Again, it was on the ballot and people voted for it. And we tried one. We put it on the ballot for roads and bridges, and they didn't vote for it. It's just democracy.
All right. Craig,
did you want to talk about Spurgeon Road or plans for Spurgeon? Or?
I'm sure it's on the list, but just down there.
Okay.
Craig, thanks for the call. Doug is, I tell you what, we're up against a break. 721-1290 is our number. We're going to get Doug's question when we come back. Our county commissioners are here in the studio, along with special guest Jason Mitchell, who's the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. They're here to talk to you. So if this is a talk show, if you have a question or a comment for your public servants, they are right here to answer your questions for another 18 minutes or so. Phone lines are open at 721-1290. Back after this.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We're having a great time talking today with our Missoula County Commissioners, Juanita Vero, Dave Strohmeyer, and Josh Slotnick. We're here in studio along with Jason Mitchell, who's the director of the Department of Public Works for Missoula County. And folks have been waiting on the line. Let's get them on. Doug, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Doug Mucker, and I'm looking at all the chain link fence that is down there in the Target Range area. I live down in that area, and I tell you what, I wasn't sure if that was still FEMA money going to all that part, that chain link fence down there. That's by the ball fields, and then even over in the Ford area there as well. And also, second question is, when is that going to get maybe cleaned up so we can have some little overflow parking there when we do soccer and whether and all the other sports that we have down there in those fields?
You're getting some quizzical expressions, Doug. Can you maybe be a little more specific?
Doug, are you talking Fort Missoula Regional Park or out at the the horse park?
Regional park where all the chain link fences that they put up when all the when we had the big windstorm and FEMA came in and helped us out on chipping all the trees up that they put out there by the soccer fields.
Boy, I don't have an answer for that, Doug. I know there was some work done on fencing out at Larchmont Golf Course that some of the trees might have hit.
Well, after that big windstorm, they lost over 100 trees in Larchmont. So
yeah. Yes. Sorry, Doug. If you get us more details, we might be able to put you in touch with the right person.
Yeah, I can try giving Adrian a call.
Yeah, it just showed up when they started when everybody was dumping their trees and stuff like that down there. It was a landing zone.
Oh, okay.
All
the down trees and debris.
Commissioner Slotnick is on the phone with our head of Office of Emergency Management to try to get an answer while we're still on the line. So thanks, Doug.
This is real live local radio, ladies and gentlemen.
We've got I'll listen offline.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it, sir. All right. I believe Dave is standing by. Dave, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners and their guest, Jason Mitchell. Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I don't know why they put a light off Reserve Street for at Mount and not at Spurgeon Road. It just didn't make any sense to me. But I was wondering, is there any plans in the future to build another bridge across the Clark Fork to kind of relieve the traffic for Reserve Street in the future?
Building another bridge.
So if I'm understanding you right, Dave, you're talking about what has been discussed for decades, the idea of a bypass of Reserve Street. I think the answer is no.
Because you got a big fat river to cross.
Well, you got that. Yeah. You probably have hundreds of millions of dollars to do so. In some cases, you'd be plowing through existing neighborhoods, which folks are rarely excited about. And one of the little known facts is that if we look at some of the congestion on Reserve Street, I'm saying myself included, I need look no farther than in the mirror to see one of the reasons why Reserve Street is so congested, because I'm driving out there to the big box stores myself. So it's not just a matter of those nasty folks in Ravalli County trying to get around Missoula to somewhere else. It's those Missoulians like us who are using the street.
Hey, Peter. Could I address the question?
Yes,
Chris. Because I was able to call
Adrian. Thank you for the call, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was able to call Adrian Beck, our Director of Emergency Management, and she said that those chain link fences, as Craig pointed out, were put up.
Doug,
I'm sorry. Were put up so that we could collect all the debris from the windstorm. Now, all that debris tossed on the ground and trucks coming and going tore the heck out of the earth in that place.
Right.
Literally the ground. So what's happening right now is rehab of that area, replanting.
So they've left the chain link fences up.
So the area can be restored.
Right.
Grass is replanted, plants replanted, water, irrigation, etc. Once it's all brought back up to snuff, the fences will come down. Right now, those fences are there to keep people off while it's being restored.
Right. Jason. Why do I have a feeling Public Works is going to get a call for a favor?
All right.
Thanks for chasing that down.
You
thanks,
bet. Adrian. We have more folks waiting on the line to visit with you folks, and Harry is waiting. Harry, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners and Jason Mitchell. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, folks. Yeah, this happened quite a while ago. You know, I think it was a couple of years ago. We had a big snow. I live up 9 Mile, and we had a tree, actually a couple little trees. A lot of snow pushed them down, and the tips were over our fence, and they're just into the barrel pit near the road. But they came around, and without so much by your leave, road people, whatever, they actually went under land and chipped those trees up. I can see if they just topped them off because they weren't on the road yet, but they were, like say, sticking into the barrel pit. So, but I'm wondering, is that kosher? I mean, that I probably wouldn't have minded so much if they hadn't come in and asked us, but they come in. All last thing I saw was, knew they were there, though. They were just finishing chipping them up, and they drove off, so...
Yeah, great question. So if it's in the public right-of-way, we have the ability to go in there and just access it directly and take care of those trees. We just had to do a lot of work up Paddy Canyon, and so we're throughout the whole canyon, we're doing the same thing. But typically if it's on private property, we could come ask, and we can check into that.
They should have asked.
Yeah, so much that they just didn't ask us. I mean, our fence obviously wasn't in a good shape to begin with. It was sort of dilapidated and all that, but still, just I could see if they just topped them off that they were sticking over the fence. But then they came all the way over, and they were big trees, but they were just chopped them up and ground them up, and then they left. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it goes without saying. Best practices would be to ask for permission and make that point of contact first.
Just to be clear, Henry, you might want to make sure, and you may have done this already, so if I got it wrong, apologies. Make sure that your fence isn't at all in the right-of-way. Lots of people's fences, including mine, had been in the right-of-way because we weren't sure where they were. And if your fence is in the right-of-way, it's called an encroachment. You don't have to take it out tomorrow. It's not that big a deal. But if it is in the right-of-way and there's a tree on it, our public works will just take the tree off.
Yeah, well, we live up 9 Mile, so, there's the gravel road, the barrel pit, and then our land is like 10 feet off.
Oh, so you're out of the right-of-way.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they should have asked.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
We can impress that upon our staff.
Yeah.
Thank you for the appreciate call, it. Sir. Let's try to get one more call in before we take a break. This is Brian. Brian, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners and Jason Mitchell.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. And that's pretty awesome that you guys come on and do this. But my question is around the bid preference. And you guys initiated a bid preference that you need to be the right color or gender, and we have so much money that we'll pay you more, 5% more, and that seems racist to me. I don't understand how that's legal.
May I ask you a question? Where did you see this? Where did you read this?
Oh, I actually called into the meeting while they were voting on it, and if you want to look into it, Slotnick actually did a Missoula Current article, and it's titled, "I Am a Racist." And I swear,
I don't recall.
And my question is, how do you decide how dark is dark enough to get the bid preference? Do you hold up a color swatch?
Okay,
my understanding is that our bidding process mirrors state
MDT,
Montana Department of Transportation.
We adopted MDT's bidding process.
That's correct. Yeah. So typically, we'll ask for a statement of qualifications to ensure that the bidders have the right qualifications in terms of technical skill, ability for performance bonds, things of that nature. And then we go typically with low bidder as long as they meet all of the qualifications. And so,
And we can do without the provocative comments.
There's no racial.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Criteria.
So, yeah. We're going to.
Not at all.
We're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have a bill waiting to comment this morning. And our county commissioners and Jason Mitchell will only be here till 9. And at 9 o'clock, we'll be shifting gears and have another guest. Sam Oliver will be joining us from the Missoula Housing Authority from 9 to 10. So lots of good stuff coming up. Thank you, Nick, for Talk Back. And if you have a question for our county commissioners, we have about 8 more minutes. So the phone number is 721-1290. We'll be right back.
just cremate.
You folks could be in on the in-studio conversation during the breaks, because it is first of all, it's very informative, and it's sometimes it's really funny too. So anyway, let's get back to the phones. Bill is waiting. Bill, good morning. You're on with our county commissioners. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I live out in the Milltown area, and I just wanted to visit with you guys about how you guys determine, you know, zoning and stuff. You know, the gentleman wanted to put in a truck stop across the street from Town Pump, and then the new AI center wanted to come in, and you guys turned that, you know, the truck stop part of it down, which is going to bring more revenue into our area and tax dollars, and then also allow us to have somebody else to buy fuel from other than Town Pump, who has taken over pretty much the whole state of Montana, especially the Missoula area.
So, this is Josh, and I'll talk just a little bit about the zoning process. So there's a couple ways zoning can happen. One of them, we can go through a growth planning for an area, and that means a ton of public engagement, and typically takes a year and a half to 2 years. And after we hear from what people want from their area, then we would create zoning that attempts to match that. The other way that zoning happens, and this is the example that you're pointing at, is when somebody owns some land that's zoned in one way and they ask for it to be zoned differently. And that's what
happens. From residential to commercial.
Or what? Or yeah, exactly. Or just one category to another. And that's what happened in this case, where the landowner came to us and said, I want a zoning change. And we said no to that zoning change. And in fact, we went with what most all that we heard from the neighborhood wanted. And the differences were between commercial center, which would have allowed not a gas station, which is you could do a neighborhood center, but would have allowed a travel plaza, which is, we know what a travel plaza is.
Yes.
An order, very of big. Yeah. Order of magnitude larger. So the neighborhood came to us loud and clear and said, yeah, we would love some retail in this area. We would love some economic activity. What we really want is to see things like a grocery store the size of Wardens, a coffee shop, a sandwich shop, a salon, a gym. We don't want a travel plaza. And the zoning that would facilitate that type of growth is called neighborhood center. So we chose to go with neighborhood center.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We have about 3 minutes left in our time together, and I want to, Jason, I want to give you an opportunity. If there are some projects that are going on in Public Works right now that you would like to inform our listeners about that they could watch out for and perhaps avoid the area or help out the folks who do the work for you.
Yeah, I just know Riverview Drive, we're going to be doing some work on the bridge there on April 8th. So I know there'll be a closure there for the day, and we're going to send out some public notices about that.
In Sealy Lake.
And just general maintenance throughout the county. And I just wanted to give a little bit about our pavement condition index that we did. We had a third party come in and actually use AI to address the conditions of our roads throughout the county. And we're in fair condition, so we're not doing as bad as some counties.
We did not have a heavy snow winter. And so is that a blessing for you?
Yeah, it is, because as you know, the plows tend to tear up the roads and create more potholes and creates more work for us in the spring.
All right. So county commissioner has got 2 minutes. So let's wrap it up. What kind of things are you folks working on?
Oh, so much. I think this morning's topic is a big piece of it, because we have been in contact with our representatives in Congress, really lobbying for and promoting the sorts of projects that Jason mentioned and the funding sources. I want to just put one more bit of information on the table. This relates to one of the first questions we got from Skip. Skip, down in Ravalli County, if you have concerns about the rail line down there, please reach out to your Ravalli County commissioners. They would love to hear from you.
You bet. All right, Josh, anything else you'd like to add? We got about a minute and a half.
Sure. And given that we're talking about public works, I want to reiterate a point that Jason made. When we look at things like Boy Scout Bridge, the only way we can do this is with federal help, because the dollars are just so big. If we look at all the taxes that come into Missoula County annually, Boy Scout Bridge would eat up close to a third of that. So without federal help, we just can't get it done, because we don't have a big enough tax base. We're a small place. So we really depend on the federal government being in the infrastructure business for us to have high quality infrastructure.
So any other special projects coming up that the public can look forward to? So, okay, I heard about that on Talkback. Dave, what do you think?
All aboard. This is nothing new, and this is one of my passions.
You want the train.
We continue to make progress in restoring passenger rail service back to Southern Montana.
And I think it's really important for folks, if you want to keep tabs on community or county projects, check out MissoulaCountyVoice.com. And then also, yeah, Jason, you want to talk about how if folks... questions or concerns about
Feel free to contact me directly at any time. I talk to constituents all day, every day, and I look forward to it.
Give me your email.
My email is jmitchell@missoulacounty.us, and feel free to reach out. My desk number is 258-4818.
Gentlemen and lady, thank you.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Appreciate you being with us. Coming up in the next hour, we'll have Sam Oliver, Executive Director of the Missoula Housing Authority. He's coming up, taking your phone calls as well. We'll talk about Missoula Organization Realtors and the new data that's just come out. We'll be back after the top of the hour.
This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is hour number two of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by Quality Seamless Gutters of Montana. Quality Seamless Gutters offers expert gutter installation and repair. Call them today for a free quote. All these numbers at 406, area code 728-4002 for Quality Seamless Gutters. Y-West Storage offers secure, flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit today, call Y-West at 510-0590. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment brings you heavy-duty truck sales, parts, and service. Call 541-9097 for Bruckner's. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. For a free estimate, call Busy Bees at 550-3219. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation parts service and sales. Pivots Plus, the number is 683-4418. Gomer's Diesel. That brings you diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Call Gomer 728-7620 today. And by Harrington Surgical Supply, providing medical and surgical supplies to healthcare professionals all across western Montana. Call Harrington Surgical Supply 721-8468.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We are shifting gears, and we are going to be talking about what's going on with the housing market in Missoula. And our special guest here in the studio this morning is Sam Oliver. Welcome back. It's good to have you back, sir.
Hey, great. Thanks for having us.
All right. So you're with the Missoula Housing Authority.
Yes.
And so we're talking about... the one thing that people who examine Missoula as a place to live, one thing they look at is, can I find a place to live that's affordable? And so I know that is really right up your alley as to what you folks do on a daily basis. So if you wouldn't mind describing a little bit about the organization you work with and what you do.
No, absolutely. At Missoula Housing Authority, we provide healthy and stable homes for at a price that our neighbors can afford. And so we have a variety of programs through our rent-capped apartments, as well as our voucher programs. And we really cast a wide net and provide a lot of housing options for our neighbors.
Excellent. So what kind of things are you working for? By the way, the phone lines are open, and Sam is here to answer your questions at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Now, I imagine the Missoula Housing Authority, you have, that's a very big umbrella.
Yes.
And so if you could describe a little bit about the area of expertise that you need to have and the folks that you work with need to have, because there's so many different needs out there.
Well, yes, aside from being Missoula's largest landlord, if you want to look at us that way, we're also a producer of affordable housing. So we're always looking for opportunity to find new places to use our informed design and our knowledge about what our community needs for housing and custom tailor that into our up-and-coming projects. We just had a large project announced yesterday, which I imagine will become news today.
Yes, let's hear it.
But we're
partnering. You can break it right here on TalkBack.
Well, it broke yesterday, so okay. It's out there. But yes, we are entering into a partnership with United Housing Partners as co-owners and co-developers on a project where we're also partnering with the city. And this project is going to go on the MRL Triangle property where the Johnson Street Shelter used to sit. And it's going to be a project that features mixed demographic and mixed pricing. We will be offering housing everywhere from 30% of AMI up to 70%. And then there's also going to be market rate homeownership opportunity as well. There's going to be a townhome component where people can get into some starter homes.
And I will say that that particular area, you know, where the shelter used to be, or has it been deconstructed now?
Yes, it's underway. All the buildings are being deconstructed.
Wonderful. All right. So when that is all finished, and you folks step in to be able to build what you want to build, what will we see there?
Well, we'll see, again, a variety of multifamily housing. There's an opportunity, perhaps, to have a senior component to this project as well. A lot of this has to come out in the wash over the next couple of years. It's a very long process. We have to go for competitive funding at the state level in April that will make this project possible. But we feel we have a fantastic project that, again, features a wonderful partnership with the city and support from the mayor.
So, yeah, Nick, go ahead.
What does that process look like for competing for those funds?
Yeah, so the primary tool that we use in affordable housing to put projects on the ground is by way of the low-income housing tax credit program. And that's nationwide. That's how public housing authorities typically start to put projects together. The challenge in Montana is that we get a relatively small allocation for our state, and so it's highly competitive. Mm. So we receive an allotment between $33 and $36 million, and there's a competitive process. So next month in April, we'll be putting in with a letter of intent for this project, and we'll be competing with a number of projects. Last year, there were, I believe, 16 projects vying for four places, essentially. So it's this project is wonderful. We have a wonderful partnership, but it is very much hinging on funding sources. What? And we, in our capital stack right now, we have 17 funding sources.
What are some of the tools that you guys use to stand out amongst your competitors to try to, I guess, win those competitions?
Well, so if you think about it, we're always trying to, we start with the community and the community need, and we're always trying to provide the most with the least amount of funding. And so that's compelling, I feel. When we go to the state, there's a number of drivers for them. It's a big state. We have a rural state. So they want to make sure that rural communities also are taken care of, and we understand the importance of that. But we rely on scale of our projects, both for the financing and being able to put these jobs together, but also when we go in front of the board, we demonstrate that for the allotment that they give us, we're hoping to show them that they get the maximum number of units.
We are up against our first break of the hour. The phone lines are open. If you have a question for Sam Oliver, he's executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority. And, oh, a heavy burden that must be sometimes. And we're talking with him, and we'd love to have your calls and comments and perhaps some suggestions as to how we can make Missoula more housing-friendly. I'm sure you'd love to hear that. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. We're coming right back after this.
Cold and flu.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. Rain likely to continue through Wednesday afternoon with skies mostly cloudy. Highs will be in the low to mid-50s. We could see some strong west to southwest winds gusting up to about 20 miles per hour in the valleys. A little higher on the ridgetops, maybe 40 to 50 miles per hour at elevation and also in southwest Montana. A chance of rain Wednesday night, mainly before midnight. It could even be mixed with a little snow at times. And then looking at Thursday, turning brighter, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-40s.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is the number, and we are talking with Sam Oliver. He's executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority, and I know the organization of realtors recently met, and so what were some of the results of that meeting?
Yes, you know, the MOR report is really key for a lot of people in town. They do a wonderful job of data collection, and they really involve a wide range of folks to give us the most accurate snapshot of our housing in our community. And I think this year the news was good. And I think that people won't be surprised to hear that the pace and volume of sales are gaining momentum while the median prices are undergoing a modest adjustment. And by that, I mean in 2025, the median price fell to $550,000, marking a 2.2 decrease from 562 the year before. So not huge, but it's not going up anymore. So.
And I will tell you, as someone who's been living in Missoula a long time, bought my first house for $23,000 on South 10th Street, right?
Yep.
Back way back in the early 70s. Yeah. And I think about now, I wonder what that house would go. It was only a one story, and it didn't have a working furnace. It just had a little heat thing. And so as you look at what's going on in Missoula, obviously the community is spreading out, in neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood.
Yes.
What's happening to the older neighborhoods now? Are there movements underway to try to help revitalize those, or is there a way to do that monetarily?
Yes, and I think whether it's neighborhood groups that engage with the city or what have you, we've seen this happen. We've seen it happen certainly in the north side, probably is most noticeable to everyone. There were a lot of older homes there, and you've seen those homes either rehabbed and brought new again, or you've seen people do infill housing. And all across Missoula, I think our new growth plan and the unified code will show this, but we're seeing things built inward and upward now. We don't have the benefit, like Bozeman does, of being able to build 30 miles in one direction.
Right.
So we have to take advantage of the land that we have, and oftentimes, again, that's building inward and upward. So that's what we're starting to see in some of these.
What are the objections to especially moving upward, making taller buildings, taller apartment buildings, things like that? Is there some active neighborhood resistance in that, or how do you deal with that?
I think the city dealt with it wonderfully when they were taking public comment for our new growth plan. And so, in short, people are opposed to everything. There's somebody opposed to everything we do in growth. And I'm the same way, Peter. I've been here for many, many years right. now. And if we're sitting around as Missoulians, a lot of us are grumbling. It's not the town it used to be.
It never is.
Right, yeah. But the one thing I'm proud of in Missoula is that we do see the eventuality. We do see that growth is going to happen, and we plan for it. And so we're doing, I think, wonderful job of getting out ahead of the growth, where a lot of other Montana communities may not be.
How do you do that? That's a great phrase, getting ahead of the growth. But obviously it takes vision to do that, and you've got to have a whole raft of statistics behind you before you can cast forward into working for the future.
No, absolutely. It's very data-driven, but it's also very team-driven, and it's very collaborative. So we're in a very unique time right now in the city of Missoula, again, with the drafting of the growth plan and the unified code reform, and then by having leadership in our mayor that comes from a development world and has prioritized some of these things, like the city surplus land survey and identifying land that we can quickly put out for development. But then again, just taking public comment every step of the way. I'm really proud of the way that our city's been doing that as well, and asking people to be active participants in what they would like to see in the Missoula future.
What are some of the really good ideas you've gotten from the public that you're sitting there and you get this email or a text or whatever, and you pound your head, oh, why didn't I think of that? Have all the good ideas been discovered so far?
Well, no, I think we get a lot of feedback, and it's wonderful. We're very careful to do experience-based design. And for instance, when we did our last two large projects, Trinity and Bellagio, we looked around and realized that there were very few 3- and 4-bedroom apartment opportunities anywhere in the community. And so those two projects were an infusion of a need there. So we're always listening to what folks need, and that's why we're here. We're not here for profit. We're here to house the maximum number of people.
As we look at growth in the Missoula area, do you see on a steady ascent or descent, or are we at a plateau? Or I know that's something you look at probably on a daily basis.
Yes, it is. And through, when you have new projects come on, you do a market study that informs the need in Missoula with data-driven numbers. But, in general, economists will tell you that, yes, we're limited, again, by our geography and our ability to put affordable housing on the ground right. for businesses that may want to move here. We hear that time and again. So we're really hopeful that we're making progress in that.
And I know that there are lots of strategies or strategeries, as a friend of mine used to say, about how to do things. And that is putting up, you know, the house, the land belongs to the city, but then the house you build and you get to keep, the house is yours, but the land it's on, which is where much of the expense comes, actually belongs to a different entity.
Yes, I think you're talking about the community land trust
right.
model.
Yes.
And so that land would be held in trust. And also the sales prices are capped and limited so that if a person grows out of that home and makes enough money to move on and find something else, their profit is capped so that it keeps it affordable for the next buyer.
Well, we have a caller waiting on the line. We're going to get to Catherine's call when we come back from the break. All of our phone lines are open with the exception of Catherine's. And so if you have a question for Sam Oliver, executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority, and everybody, when they move to Missoula, first thing they want to know is, where can I get a house or an apartment or whatever? And I'm sure he's a very busy guy dealing with all that. So we're going to come right back after this quick timeout.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. Missoula leaders say they put together a plan to redevelop the North MRL site in Midtown Missoula, resulting in a mix of more than 200 housing units. 192 of those would be deed-restricted affordable units. Missoula Mayor Andrea Davis says the cooperative effort with the city, Missoula Housing Authority, and the private developer is helping to meet Missoula's housing goals.
There was just some real synergy between the city's ability to move forward now on this parcel and the opportunity at the state level for some basically deeply discounted financing that makes these kinds of projects feasible.
The project depends on completing a quick application for funding before it expires in a few weeks. This sounds like a safety issue from the 1980s, but Tracy Taylor says the FBI is warning us to watch out for thieves waiting to pounce at ATM machines.
Montana residents are being urged to stay alert after a nationwide warning about a rise in bank-related thefts. The FBI says organized groups are targeting people leaving banks or ATMs, often watching for anyone withdrawing cash and following them to another location. These crimes can happen at any time of the day, sometimes catching victims off guard after they leave the bank. Officials say simple steps like staying aware, securing cash quickly, and avoiding lingering in parking lots can help reduce the risk. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
The Cascade County Sheriff's Office hoping to turn around a shortage of detention officers using a one-day hiring blitz to find people interested in a law enforcement career. Sheriff Jesse Slaughter says the officers are essential to the safety and operation of the county's detention center, and the county wants to find people who want to step into a role that really matters. Saturday, April 11th, candidates will be given a chance to finish all the screenings, interviews, testing, and other evaluations, and could receive a conditional job offer by the end of the day. Normally, that process takes weeks or even months. Applicants must check in between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. on the 11th there at the Cascade County Sheriff's Office. This is the Montana State News Network.
Every act of change begins with a neighbor, with someone saying,
"We take care of each other here."
In food banks and food pantries, neighbors pack fresh food and dignity into every box, moving food from farms to families through Feeding America's nationwide network. So when that box reaches a home, it carries more than food. It carries a promise that together we can end hunger. Feeding America, led by neighbors. Take action to end hunger now at feedingamerica.org.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country this spring. More than just a walk, Moving Day is a fun experience that unites the community in the fight against Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's doesn't stop, and neither will we. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register for an event in your area at movingdaywalk.org. That's movingdaywalk.org.
We're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is the number. I'm Peter Christian. To questions and taking your phone calls this morning, our special guest in the studio, Sam Oliver, executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority, and Catherine has been waiting online. Catherine, go ahead, please.
Good morning. And I don't know if you are involved in this or have any information at this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the status of the that building out at Fort Missoula? It kind of has fallen out of the news. So is that going to be torn down, or is it going to be
Are they going to try to sell it again, or what's the deal?
Every time somebody tries to buy it or tear it down or whatever, the Historical Society goes crazy, and So if you could provide an update on that.
I don't. I just stay adjacent to it a little bit, and I thought I saw most recently in a headline that there was a demo permit that had been approved.
Wow.
But again, yes, it's been mired in appeals and opinions. I saw that the Forest Service would like to move out there and build a new building for some of their firefighting depot stuff, but other than that, I can't speak with accuracy.
Do you know why the Historical Society has been so adamant that nothing be done about it?
Again, when you're the Historical Society and you have buildings on your record, you're very reluctant to let go of them, that being their mandate. So, I'm not super in the know on this project, but I've been involved with historical ones in the past, and there are definitely diverging viewpoints when it comes to historic buildings.
Well, it seems like they'd rather have it burned down or, you know, demoed.
Fall down.
Than have it be purposeful, you know, be used for something. So it makes no sense to me. I mean, I like historic buildings, and I remember when the Missoula Merck went through that whole process, but... On the other hand, it's not going to do anybody any good to just have it just destroyed. If you can save it and repurpose it for something, that makes much more sense. But that's just me. So,
yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. These things just take time. From a builder developer standpoint, I'll tell you that it takes time, and it's often representative of going through a public process. And so at the end of the day, I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful there is public process there and all the parties are able to speak, but it certainly takes time to churn through that.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Now Nick, we had guests here a couple of years ago that were planning a development project at the Ford. They put the plans together, and they were very excited about it. They're here on TalkBack taking phone calls from people, you know, trying to accentuate the historical, you know, aspect, and they got turned down. And yeah. So I think that happens a lot, and it's very discouraging for someone who's trying to maybe make the community a little bit better.
Yes, yes. And it's, you know, the fort's an interesting place. It's kind of a Missoula gem. And yeah. So, like I said, people are clinging to some of the historic elements of that. And I can get it. It's part of Missoula's history.
They're jealous. They're jealous of the historicity.
Yes, exactly.
You bet. All right, let's get Steve on the line. Steve, thank you for holding, sir. You're on with Sam Oliver. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. And Sam, I'm not sure you're going to be able to answer this question, but... nonetheless, I want to pose it. I just want to make sure the listeners understand. We talk about all of this state-funded and city-funded housing, which, you know, is what it is, right? I mean, essentially, this is land that the city buys from the private market. It then gives to free of charge, usually, to developers who develop this land. And then those same developers typically get MRA funds, which further subsidizes their development. In the case of the property on 3rd Street near the railroad tracks there across from the Rockin' Rudy's Annex, or this large project being discussed right now, this one that we heard on the break about and is in the news currently, is a perfect example. The city's giving the developers the property, and then the state is subsidizing through tax credits, essentially, the development of these properties. Often, especially in the case of the 3rd Street property, I don't know as much about this new large one being advertised. That's what it is, essentially. In the 3rd Street case, the developer, not only did they get the tax credits, meaning they had to put up none of their own equity or none of their own money to develop, they also got 2.4 or so million of MRA funds to develop that project. They put up none of their own equity, zero. And yet those same folks take, on average, somewhere between 10 and 15% development fees. So for the average listener, that means that if that project on 3rd Street, which is all subsidized housing, cost essentially $10 million to build, which is about what that thing probably costs, the developer walks away with $1 million
just $1 million check for developing that piece of land, even though they put up none of their own money and the entire project was subsidized by other people, which, you know, in a free market society, that's great. I applaud that kind of reward. But in the case where you stated, sir, that we're trying to provide people housing and you're not concerned about, you know, financial gain, which I applaud you, by the way, I agree. I like to see people housed as well, especially when it's very difficult these days to buy groceries or put gas in your car. Here's my question. Why doesn't the city at least put caps on developer fees that these folks are allowed to take out? Right. So if that project that's being advertised on the news right now is really going to cost $67 million and the average developer fee is roughly 10%, that means that developer is going to walk away with $6.7 million for a year's worth of work or 2 years worth of work. That seems ridiculous when that same amount of money could have been saved in the project or put back into the project. And, you know, another 20 units perhaps could have been developed for people to be housed. Why doesn't the city put caps and just make disclosure happen? Because that's the other problem, sir, is that there is no disclosure on what these developers are making when they receive all of this funding. There's no mandatory disclosure so that the public knows how much someone is making off a project like the one on Third or like the one that's being discussed right now. Why doesn't that happen? And again, you may not know the answer, and that's fine. But I want the listener of KGVO, and Peter, this is really something I really wish you guys would investigate, because ultimately it creates winners and losers. There are a few folks who get really rich off this stuff. They provide housing, which we need, but shouldn't we also demand, since we are the taxpayer paying for a lot of it, that we understand how much they're making and whether that perhaps what they're making is too much, and that should be put back into the development of additional units so that we increase the housing inventory stock for all, if we're going to subsidize this housing. Thank you. I appreciate any comment you have on
Steve,
that.
Steve, thanks for the call. We're going to tell you what, should we take the break now? No, let's have you address that. That's important.
No, absolutely. There's a lot to unpack there. The first thing I would say about the evil developers is that no developer goes into affordable housing to make the maximum amount of money. These developers are benevolent Missoulians in my book that are making much less than they could to go out and buy a piece of property and put up market rate housing. So when I talk about these people, they're very essential partners to us. We're not going out in a national sense and picking somebody from a state far away that doesn't know anything about Montana. Our developers are extremely important to us, and they have the connections. And, you know, our developers in this case sit on the Montana Housing Coalition. They're integrated in the cause. And so I think there's a misperception there. And then when you talk about the city and object to their investment in these projects, that's exactly what they're doing, is investing in housing and affordable housing. And I will tell you that without the MRA investment and without these developers who have the penchant to do these very difficult projects, we would not see any affordable housing, because it doesn't pencil. The other developers know this. There's, if not for us, how many other capital A affordable rent-controlled projects have been built by private developers with no subsidy from the city? It does not work. So it's unfortunate. We would love not have to ask for subsidy. We would love to make these absolutely perfect, but we're working within such financial constraints that this is honestly the only way to provide this type of housing.
We're up against a break. 721-1290 is our number. All of our phone lines are open. If you have a question for Sam Oliver, Executive Director of the Missoula Housing Authority, which really affects all of us, because all of us have to have a place to live in Missoula. Surprise, surprise. So if you have a question or a comment, we would love to have you give us a call at 721-1290. And Sam is waiting to answer your questions when we return after this. Hey, you know, we're right smack. Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning, producing Talk Back. And joining us here in the studio this morning, Sam Oliver. He's executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority. And all sorts of questions are coming up about the availability of housing and what we call, quote, affordable housing. So if you wouldn't mind, just talk a little bit about some of the MOR data that, you've been collecting. And I know that there's been a recent meeting to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was a lot that came out of it, and I think the general sense was that just Missoula is correcting now. The market is correcting. The pandemic was a big shakeup. Yeah. Obviously, we have continuing.
It's amazing how long that has taken to, you know, the fallout.
Well, it is, and the economy is a big ship to turn around. We're having national challenges right now, and I think we will feel some of the impacts of this for the next 2 years as well. So housing's no different, and there's a lot of factors that come into that between interest rates and, again, just market availability. So when we see the market soften a little bit or at least stabilize and not continue to increase at the pace we saw, it gives us hope.
What is your relationship with the real estate companies in Missoula, the individuals and the groups, with the Missoula Organization of Realtors, about how you work together to try to find homes for as many people as need them?
Well, again, we provide a lot of the data for the MOR report as far as rental data and voucher data, and have a wonderful board chair who is a realtor as well, Ms. Sheena Comer-Winter. And so she's always able to provide the real estate perspective when talking about strategic planning and what have you. But it, again, Missoula being such a nice small community where we know one another, it's nice to have peers in special areas where you just reach out when you have a question. It's a two-way street. They call on us and we call on them.
Obviously, it's a competitive business. When you're a realtor, there are, you're trying to get the nicest home at the best possible price for your client, that sort of thing. How does that all work when it comes to the Missoula Organization of Realtors?
Well, the Missoula Organization of Realtors represents all of, you know, the realtors combined, and it's a great place for them to put out their initiatives, again, to share data with the community, and I think it endears them that they have skin in the game, and they're very interested in the data here, and they're interested in how we move the needle. So this report and the data in it informs many peer agencies who are wondering exactly what is happening in certain data areas. We can drill down and see the lifetime look at that, as well as looking back on trends going back 10, 20 years. They have that data that's very important, very interesting when you look at the impact of COVID on a graph format and kind of how things are stabilizing. It starts to help things make sense. So it's very accessible. Anybody can get on the Missoula Organizational Realtors and access the annual report there. And there's just a bevy of very interesting.
Yeah, Nick, please go ahead.
What's the biggest thing that stood out to you from that report? I know you obviously mentioned the median home data and the fact that we're stabilizing, slightly decreasing, but is there anything else that just jumped out that maybe was a surprise or not a surprise or anything like that?
You know, it defines some of the increases we've seen. For instance, in one-bedroom multifamily rents, they rose 5.41% to just over $1,200. But then two-bedroom multifamily rents rose 11.4%. And then three bedrooms stabilized and hardly raised at all. So it's very basic information, but it also tells us two bedrooms are in demand.
I was going to say it's supply and demand.
Yes, yes. So again, when we talk about informing projects coming up, this is one, you know, particular source that we'll look at alongside a market study to tell us what the community really needs.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
You mentioned earlier, you know, the need for three bedroom and four bedroom apartments. I mean, I rent. I have an apartment. And, you know, even over the years looking, I don't remember even seeing vacancies for three bedrooms, four bedrooms. If you were going to do that, it was like you had to be in a house. And so everything that seems to be built now is a one bedroom and even rare two bedrooms. So could you talk a little bit about availability there and supply?
No, absolutely. I think I mentioned that that really informed our design on both the Villaggio apartments and the Trinity apartments. And I think the takeaway from this is that three-bedroom single-family rent stabilized. And so it's telling us that we made a difference there. And certainly when those apartments came on the market, that was something that didn't exist. And there was a lot of demand. And we've been able to house a lot of Missoula neighbors. So it'll be interesting. We'll keep an eye on it, you know. And if in coming years this tilts again and it looks like the inventory of 3 and 4 bedrooms is not enough for Missoula, well, that's when developers talk about the most sensible thing to put on the ground. Because again, affordable housing developers oftentimes stay in the deal after for the compliance period. And so they're as compelled as we are to see these units filled up.
Would you mind describing what you mean by a compliance period? A lot of folks who are just average folks don't understand that.
Yes, in the low-income housing tax credit deals, the tax credit investor is in the deal for the first 15 years. And then those tax credits burn off and they no longer need them. So at that point, we have the option normally to buy the project from that tax credit investor for a nominal price. They've seen the benefit of the tax credits and they're done with the deal at that point. But at the same point, our projects are layered on a 50-year affordability covenant. So again, these projects are guaranteed long-term affordability.
Yep. We're going to come right back. Phone lines are open. If you have a question for Sam Oliver, he's here to answer your questions this morning. He's executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority. So maybe you just moved to Missoula and you have some questions for Sam. Give us a call. 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. This is Talk Back. We'll be back right after this.
Helping your inner circle prepare for emergencies can start in many ways. Put together an emergency kit with YPOL. Create a family communication plan with your tita. Remind Bai to keep a backup battery charged. It all starts with a simple step, telling those you care about to be ready for the worst. So start a conversation and plan for emergencies together. Get more tips at ready.gov/start. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
And we are back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. Special guest in the studio, Sam Oliver, Executive Director of the Missoula Housing Authority. And folks are on the line waiting to visit with you. And Catherine is up next. Catherine, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, just a couple of quick questions here. What is your wait list like? How many people are on a wait list and how long does it last? And, or is it lasting these days? And also, what are your income restrictions? And if somebody starts making more money than you allow, how do you deal with that?
Interesting questions.
Sure. Our voucher wait list right now is sitting at about 2 years is what we're telling folks. Oftentimes it's quicker. We go through and refresh that wait list once a year. So oftentimes if you've been sitting for some time, you've found other housing or you've moved out of the neighborhood. So we keep our wait list fresh. And right now it's down to about 18 months. Now, when you are awarded a voucher, again, there's income compliance that's required. Make sure you fit into the programmatic definition. And then if somebody does improve make more money over time, that calculation is simply taken into effect. And that is so that homeowners never pay more than 30% of their income towards rent. So in other words, if you get a raise and you go up some amount, then again, they adjust that. So you pay just a little bit more, but not more than 30%.
Okay. Do you still have restrictions on the amount of assets that a person can have?
That is taken into account during the income qualification, yes.
Okay. So what is that level of assets that somebody is allowed to have?
You know, it's a sliding scale depending on household size and that individual's income. So, I couldn't get right into the exact dollar amount, but I encourage you just to come in and talk to one of our specialists.
Well, I was just wondering, because at some point, I believe... there was a limit of like $1,800 of assets that somebody was allowed to have. And then after that, they started getting kicked off of their of lists for like SNAP and EBT and housing and all that. And what it does is it sets up this system where somebody then gets caught and is not able to accumulate wealth or value.
essentially is left at a certain level and not able to improve. That's kind of what I was thinking of. So
again, I think the assets determination is part of the overall income qualification, and they want to make sure the playing field is level for all applicants. And so in these particulars, I can't, that dollar amount sounds suspect to me. But again, we can look at your situation, and we'd be happy to sit down with a specialist and tell you where we're at.
Oh, well, it's not for me, but I just noticed that over the years that seems to have been the case. It's kind of more of a philosophical observation that once you get entangled in the system, it's very difficult to get out of it, because then you put your shelter and your food and all that at risk.
Yeah, I'd be interested just to look at the individual case, because on the other hand of that, it's we're also making sure that the people who need these vouchers are getting them, and that those who are making too much money do not. So that's something we have to really comply with federal guidelines, and is somewhat out of our hands.
Okay, thank you.
Catherine, thank you for the call. Jeff is next. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Sam Oliver. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Sam. Good morning, all. I don't know if you're the right person to ask this question of, but I just, earlier this week, I went through idle curiosity and tried to figure out how the homeless rate in Missoula compared to, say, big cities like New York and L.A. And New York, according to the last information I could find, has estimated about 4,500 people homeless in the city, which, if you equate it out, that's about 50 per 100,000. And then I did the same math for L.A. I think it was about 45,000 in L.A., oddly enough. And that was just around 500 per 100,000. And in Missoula, there are 636 homeless as of the last census inventory. I don't know what you would call it. Last time the city did the count. Mm-hmm. So Missoula has a higher homeless rate than either L.A. or New York. And my question is, why? What is there about Missoula that makes it so high, that it's higher than the big cities? It seems like we're north. We're not that friendly of a climate in terms of weather. Why the high rate of homelessness in Missoula and actually around the state? And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if you have an answer for that.
All right, let's let him answer. Thanks for the call, Jeff.
To me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jeff. I think that's a good question, and it's one that a lot of people are grappling with. I think that the anecdotal evidence shows that, you know what, we have more retirees in per capita in Missoula than New York and L.A. maybe, and we, you know, have a greater number of younger people. I think that the things that attract all these different demographics to Missoula are the same for folks that are houseless. They do appreciate the beauty of the community. They appreciate the friendly people. As far as Missoula goes, we have more services than many of the cities in the state.
Yeah, we just voted to spend $7 million a year on our new fire department.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's a place that a lot of people want to live. And we saw that through the pandemic. That's a big part of our real estate issue. A lot of people moved here that could work remote. A lot of people then bought a house for a rental that they could come spend time at in the summer and rent out the rest of the year. So I think it's dangerous to think of the houseless neighbors as any different than us in a lot of respects. But I think that would be the answer. I think it's a good question. I think there's a lot of people studying that question. And I know that it's been a strain on the community. It kind of exploded during the pandemic and afterwards, and we saw a lot of strain on the community. And these are difficult things for our city leaders and our community to grapple with.
All right, thanks for the call. We're going to come right back after we have a one-minute timeout, and we have all of our phone lines are open at 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. Back with more of your calls right after this.
Hi, this is John with
Okay, we're back. This is Talk Back, the final segments here with Sam Oliver, Executive Director of the Missoula Housing Authority. And I know one of the things you wanted to talk about is you took a trip recently. So if you could share what you found.
Yeah, sure, Peter. I also represent the Montana chapter of NARL, which is the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. They're our most powerful advocate and lobby nationwide. We have regional chapters, we have national chapters, and it's a very close-knit group. So went for a conference there, but it affords us once a year opportunity to visit all of our electeds on the Hill. So while there, I was able to visit both congressmen's office, both senators' office, speak with Senator Sheehan Daines. And I think the one thing that's important to report out to folks is that our electeds see housing as a bipartisan issue. And I think a lot of lawmakers in Washington do. The importance of housing stock.
Well, it transcends many political things. In fact, to have a place to live.
Exactly. I think people realize that safe, stable housing is really a foundation for everything else in life. And so our electeds do a lot of work for us through the year, and they advocate for us heavily. And it was just very refreshing to meet with all their staffs. Unfortunately, we are sad to see Congressman Zinke and Senator Daines move on, because their staffs have been there a while and they've been really powerful advocates for public housing authorities in the state. So,
and you know them and they know you.
Exactly. You know, it's Montana. It's still a big, small state. And so it's nice to see people face to face a few times a year, but then also see the actual activities going on the Hill and see what they're doing to bolster this. Right now, there's a housing bill that's passed the Senate and waiting for the House to get on board with. But that would be the first major housing bill in 16 years.
Wow.
So, you know, in a time where there seems to be extreme polarity and disagreement, it's comforting to see that they're listening to the housing issue.
All right, let's get Steve on the line. Steve, thanks for holding. You're on with Sam. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Sam. Hey, when I called last, I heard your answer, but I don't know that you really attempted to answer my question. You certainly made fun of me, and that's fine. I'm used to it on this channel. But quickly, why you mentioned that these developers are so benevolent in their development of these properties. Well, why wouldn't you be willing to, you know, ask the city to mandate the developers' earnings when on these projects in particular, exposed to the community, how much the developer is making? Like, for example, on that $67 million project or the last one on 3rd Street. Can you answer that question? I would really like to know that. I mean, they're so benevolent. Everyone works for free, I assume, in these situations, right? Do you even know, Sam, what they're making? Well, let me ask that question specifically. Do you know what the folks on that 3rd Street across from Rock and Rudy's are making in developer fees?
No, I don't know. That is not my project, but I do know, again, that's a local Missoulian, okay. And I do know developers in this town who have done projects for free. So you are exactly right. Yes. That'd be an example of a wonderful...
I'm right that you don't know, but well, let me educate you. It's over $1 million on that project that they're walking away with, on funds that they received, $2.4 million from the MRA, and 100% of the equity needed to develop the project from state tax credit program. So is it right that a benevolent developer should make $1 million on a project that costs about $7 to $10 million to build, when that same $1 million, Sam, could be reapplied? And I'm not saying the developer shouldn't make anything, but $1 million for, you know, 2 years of part-time work, I think that's a good gig if you can get it, if you're the cashier at Ace Tremper's, or if you're, you know, an employee of the fire department, as Peter just mentioned, right? So my question to you, and I know you don't know the answer to these questions, that's clear, but maybe you could take the feedback back to the, you know, the NAMBLA community members you're a part of here in Missoula, to talk to them about, hey, we need to be more forthright with the community and disclose to them and make developers tell us if they want our money for MRA, especially with MRA funds, where, you know, it drives up other taxpayers' property taxes. They should have to expose to the community what they're making at a minimum. And if
if we can get there, we should also be able to get to,
Steve,
given that they're taking subsidization, how much should they keep?
We're running out of time. We only have 2 minutes left, but thanks for the call. So if you'd like to address that, Sam, please go ahead if you can, please.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Steve makes great points. And there could be some more transparency and education down around these jobs. The things I would counter with are not everybody can do this job. You cannot take a cashier from Ace Tremper's to do this. It's a very specialized skill, and it is very heavy lifting if you follow what they do.
There's a lot of risk involved.
Well, there's a ton of risk involved, because if you don't get these tax credits and you've just worked full-time, I'm going to correct Steve, full-time for a couple of years on the front end of this project, you don't get any money. And so there's a great deal of risk there. I don't think there is anybody being taken advantage of. And these projects oftentimes take a lot more than 2 years.
Got about a minute left in our time together. How can we contact your office and ask more questions of you, sir?
Sure. You can always look us up on our website, and we have a fantastic staff directory there to guide you to
Missoula Housing Authority, right?
Yes, and guide you to whoever you need to talk to there.
Wonderful. It has been a great pleasure, and thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us and taking all these calls. We appreciate it.
No, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Okay, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to what's coming up on Wednesday, what's happening, sir?
We'll have our resident CPA, Walt Caro, answering your tax questions. Deadline is approaching.
All right. Yeah. Again, that's going to be much more important than maybe it has been in the past to have Walt Caro on here in the studio with us. A gentleman with well over 50 plus years of tax experience. And so we deeply appreciate the fact that he's willing to come on the show and offer his advice for absolutely free. And so we do appreciate that. And again, a big thank you to Sam, the executive director of the Missoula Housing Authority, for being with us today. Appreciate it, sir.
Hey, thank you very much.
You bet. We're going to see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock, with another edition of Talkback. We'll see you then.